of the week again. It's the 11 o'clock hour on Wednesday. You know what it means. It's left, right, and center with Jeff Schlemmer, Robert Metz, and yours truly somewhere in the middle, Jim Chapman. Welcome, guys. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas to both of you.
Same to you.
Let me extend an invitation to you as well to join us for our Christmas party on Friday morning. I don't know if you can make it or not, but I know many of our listeners would like to meet you guys, so if you get a chance, we'll be out at Samuel's at the corner of Warncliffe and Southdale on Friday between 9 and 12, and it's a free breakfast.
Hey, bonus.
Yeah. Now, I know, Bob, you believe there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Free breakfast?
There is a free breakfast on Friday, so we'll be looking forward to it. If you can make it, we'd love to have you there. Of course, this is the part of our program where we take a look at issues in our community, in our society, and we from a bit of a philosophical perspective. Bob Metz tends to look at things more from the right side of the spectrum, and Jeff Schlemmer more from the left, although, as we've discussed many times, sometimes the lines do get blurred. That does not mean, however, that we cannot discuss the issues, and we do. Now, this morning, I understand you want to take a look, guys, at the role of the media in terms of shaping people's behavior, specifically violence and so on. There were some articles in the Free Press a couple weeks ago, and we talked about it. We didn't have a chance to do it on the air, but we talked about that. You both expressed some concern about the public attitudes towards this. Should there be more censorship? Should we be stamping out violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? It seems to me that ultimately it does come down to the question of censorship. What is appropriate to be censored? We live in a society where I think most people, and maybe I'm wrong with this, a lot of people, if you said, do you support censorship, I think a lot of people would say no. We think, on the whole, it's a bad idea. It is a free society, and we value free speech. On the other hand, there are areas where we do support censorship. We censor things like child pornography. We censor things like propagating hatred of other groups or individuals or whatever, where we seem to be fairly comfortable as a society with that kind of censorship. But when we get beyond those two relatively limited areas, I think the sense is that we don't want government interfering. Bob Metz, let me ask you first. There seems to be, according to some of the experts, some relationship between the amount of violence that children are exposed to in the media and what seems to be an increase in violence in society. A, do you buy that rationale? And B, what would you do about it if you do buy it or not? What should we be doing?
First of all, this comes back to your basic question, whether what we see on TV and in the media actually shapes our own behavior. What I fear when we get into an area of discussion like this is that we're really asking whether we can use what's in the media and in the news as an excuse for our own behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think if the moment we accept that argument, we are in effect excusing behavior and saying that behavior is something outside yourself and that you're not individually responsible. Now, without, you know, sounding facetious, I mean this seriously. I think we should get violence off the streets and put it back on TV and in the theaters where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of violence in the media is so essential to most plot structures. I mean, whenever you take, drama from Shakespeare on up, there is always a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And at the root of that conflict, there is always violence or the threat of it, even if it's never carried out. In some general way, that's what shapes the battle between good and evil. And I think that in their haste to rid the airwaves and the media of violence, many, supposed do-gooders are really getting rid of the distinctions between when it is appropriate to use force,
mm-hmm,
and when it is not appropriate. And I would say that a lot of the kids' shows that are called violent, you know, are really excellent teachers in terms of what is good, what is wrong, you know, what is evil, things like that. And you get some people who are just a little loony about what violence is. I mean, is violence two inanimate objects colliding? I've heard people call a movie violent because cars get crashed up or some inanimate object or an explosion where nobody gets hurt. But that's a violent movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or watching a cartoon character getting flattened. Come on now, that's not violence.
Well, certainly there was a big kerfuffle, and I'm going back 10 or 15 years ago, about the Roadrunner cartoons. There was a period there.
They've been sanitized now.
Well, there was a big concern that Wile E. Coyote kept getting hammered and smashed and blown up and falling off of cliffs, and yes, they've cleaned them up.
Yes,
somewhat.
Yes, and I think that's absurd. I think it's a loss. I think part of the humor in the Roadrunner cartoons was the ultimate consequence of what he was always trying to do when he was trying to catch the Roadrunner. But it's the same thing. I remember when I was a kid, the Three Stooges were on all the time, And they were always poking each other in the eye and hitting each other on the head with hammers and stuff, and, you know, being none the worse off for it. And, yes, very, very young children are impressionable, and that's where parents come in. But you don't sanitize the airwaves and get rid of all of this stuff in the hopes that that's going to somehow change the environment. Because I really think the message is that in so doing, you're saying that violence is an acceptable means of achieving an end. We don't like what we see on TV, so we're going to use the force of government to demand that what we disapprove of will not be there. And to me, that is what teaches violence.
Well, Jeff Schlemmer, Bob says it's time to get violence off the street and back onto the screen and on stage where it belongs. What do you think?
Well, that's a very clever turn of phrase. I love that. And I think that there is a tough issue, and that is to balance censorship, which we all hate and which can be extremely dangerous, from looking realistically at what influence TV can have and other kinds of media. I look at video games, for instance, the shoot 'em up games. Fundamentally, a problem seems to be that violence is interesting. Violence is entertaining, whereas peace and love is boring. So if you want to sell a movie, if you want to sell a Starship Trooper, you've got to, you know, have mass chaos going on all over the place. And I think that it is important to recognize that there is something going on there. Kids do get their behavior from somewhere, and we need to think about that. One of the difficulties I see, I guess, is that I sometimes wonder whether people can distinguish between reality and fiction in some of these things. I look at something like our crime rate, for instance, where, you know, the police will tell us that the crime rate's been going down in Canada for years. You know, it's safer now than we've been in, recorded memory. And yet the perception seems to be that we live in dangerous times. People worry about it. They're stressed out and all these things. And it's like, you don't need to worry about it. It's not true. I guess one of the concerns is, how do we make sure people understand this is a TV show and this is the news?
But if that is the case, then let me play devil's advocate for a second. If it is the case that our crime rates are going down, and you and I both know that there's some dispute about that, the reported rates appear to be, but there's some question about the reporting. But take it as given that they are at least not getting any worse. We know that the number of incidents of violence to which our kids are exposed over the X number of years certainly has gone up. There's no question it is higher than it used to be. Well, maybe there's been a bit of a retardation in the last couple of years, but generally speaking, I don't forget the figure was, but now kids, they see 17,000 murders before they're 12 or whatever. So that's definitely gone up. If, in fact, the crime rate is going down or is staying stable, and yet they're being exposed to that much more violence, and doesn't that suggest maybe that there isn't a causality there?
Well, I don't know if I would agree that there's less there was less violence in the past. I look at shows back in the 60s, for instance, and people were getting killed all over the place, but in Star Trek, they always went behind a rock to do it. Yeah. Whereas in Brooklyn South, it's sort of like red things flying all over the air and everything. It's quite different.
I think a large part of our increased perception of violence is that we have such an incredibly immediate media that can be at any spot on the earth at any point in time. And we can hear of every act of violence from here to Britain to South Africa to the Soviet Union, anywhere. And, act as though that's part of our daily lives, when it really isn't. And we weren't exposed to all these things happening in the years of history when we didn't have this kind of media, although it was probably a worse society at the time.
Let me ask both of you this question. It has been suggested that, as Jeff said earlier, that peace and love tend to be a little more boring. It's not quite as stimulating. It has been suggested that violence is a propensity for violence is part of the human condition, that it's part of our genetic makeup, and that to deny that is a very dangerous thing, and that we would do better to extend throughout our society the way we do with sports. Sports, in many ways, are kind of they're an outlet for people. They're an outlet for aggression, a socially sanctioned outlet for aggression. We see boxing, for example, another socially sanctioned outlet. Anybody who's watched a football game on Saturday with a room full of guys who are into football knows that there's an awful lot of testosterone released by hollering and yelling and pounding on tables and so on when your team does well or doesn't do well. Are we maybe looking the wrong way? Should we maybe be saying, yeah, we need to recognize it? Yes, we are potentially a violent creature, so let's try to focus that and let's try to funnel that so we can express that in ways that are not deleterious to society.
Well, it takes two to tango. It only takes one to start a fight. And
Where do you get all these great lines?
This is wonderful.
Gotta write this down.
It's because these are bromides that have been thrown at me in the reverse, and I've learned to deal with them in the sense of, you know, so often people say that it takes two to have a violent. No, it's one. It takes one party to create violence, and the other person has been placed in the situation of self-defense. But, you know, you talk about peace and love being boring and stuff. I don't think it's so much that it's boring that it's uneventful and doesn't make for great storytelling. Great storytelling is based upon a great conflict and having two opposing forces against each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the other issues you're talking about, violence in sports and getting into the boxing arena, I think if you're really talking about true violence, social violence, the thing we must look for is the absence of consent. Two boxers that get into an arena have consented to get in there. I can't even in my wildest imagination call that violence until they do a Mike Tyson and bite somebody's ear off. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think the other guy consented to get into the ring to have that done to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an act of violence. But nevertheless, the nature of the sport is not that it's violent. I know there's a lot of discussion these days about hockey violence, mm-hmm. and whether they want to actually have that incorporated as part of the sport. I'm thinking, well, that's not hockey to me anymore, but if that's where the market's going and that's what the players consent to, I can't complain about it if somebody gets hurt on the ice.
This is Left, Right, and Center on 1290 CJBK. We're coming back to take your calls, too. 643-1290, star 1290 on the Cantel, if you'd like to participate in our discussion. If you have a question or a comment, Jeff Schlemmer and Robert Metz are here representing the left and the right, and I'm somewhere in the center. Well, Julie was with us a moment ago. Maybe the doorbell rang and she had to leave us. But if you have a comment or a question, if you want to join our discussion this morning on Left, Right, and Center with Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz, we invite you to do so. We were just talking during the break about Starship Troopers. Now, neither of my guests have seen that. I wonder how many of you have seen the movie. And we had a question a little bit earlier from a caller. Wanted to know, well, what is your definition of gratuitous violence then? Is there no such thing as gratuitous violence? I think that movie was gratuitous violence. And I love, I'm not going to kid it around about it, I love violent movies. I love shoot 'em up, bang, bang, blow things up, guys getting shot left, right, and center. Because I know it's a movie. It doesn't challenge my sense of reality. And I like that sense of adventure and get the adrenaline pumping. And at the end of the movie, you kind of go, well, that was fun. And then you go home. And you don't go home and beat up your wife or kick your dog. At least I don't. I don't have a dog. But the idea is that it's escapism. Starship Troopers, I thought, was something new for me and something that it's been a long time since I've seen anything like this. And this was a movie that was full of very graphic violence. Between species, not against humans, but there were a lot of pictures of shredded human bodies and so on that the other guys. At the end of the movie, there's a climactic scene where they have caught the brain of this of the enemy, this brain bug, and they've got this fellow who's a psychic who, in fact, is Doogie Howser from TV. I don't know what his really name
He's
is.
He's so smart.
It's Doogie Howser, yeah, whatever his name is. And they have this moment of tension where he's probing the mind and probing the brain of the enemy, and I'm thinking, well, here's the point where they make the case that it's been a misunderstanding, that we have misunderstood each other and that there is room for us to live together and share the galaxy and so on and so on. Instead of that, it's, he's afraid of us, they're scared of us, and everybody's firing their guns and blah, blah, and that's kind of the end of the movie. And the message is that, you know, the more violence we put on these guys, the more we scared them, and eventually we're going to stamp them out and kill them all, and yay for us. And to me, that movie was gratuitous violence because there was no attempt to improve the human condition. There was no attempt to show any insights into the value of communication between species or between individuals. And I thought that was a waste. Now, Bob, I want to ask you from your perspective, do you think there's any onus on the filmmakers when they have that kind of opportunity to inject that kind of message?
An onus? No, certainly not one that should be imposed. I'd like to think the marketplace would impose that onus on film producers. But I can say that I've seen a lot of nonviolent movies that fit the description of the movie you just described in other respects, mm-hmm. that were just boring, had no point to them,
mm-hmm.
Were possibly even disgusting in some respects. But, you know, putting the message into the film is up to the filmmaker. And if it's a message you want to hear, that you like to hear, that you dislike, I mean, freedom of speech has to pertain to those ideas that we find most offensive. If we're only talking about freedom of speech for ideas that we agree with, or freedom mm-hmm. of speech for things that we like, or the message that we like, well, then the whole point of freedom of speech doesn't even mean anything. What's the point? You know, to live in a free society, I think you have to build some level of tolerance. You have to be able to live by that maxim, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, names do hurt. They can.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't they don't justify a physical response.
And they scare us, though, and I think that's the problem. That on the one hand, I'm thinking about Jack Granatstein's book, Petrified Campus, mm-hmm. and how he says the problem on a university with not allowing people to hear the bad stuff is that they don't develop the ability to discern the good from the bad.
To discriminate, yeah.
But on the other hand, I think those words, they do scare us. And look at examples throughout even 20th century history of the demagogues who have used words extremely effectively to take us to very, very bad places. And think of Goebbels, for instance, was a genius in dealing with the media, and extremely effective. It scares the wee out of us.
No, but the effectiveness of dictators in the past has not been based on the fact that they had a great idea and it was accepted by the public. It was based on the fact that they had the legalized use of force, which is the irony of what we're talking about.
They didn't start with it. They got it through their words.
Well, they got it because the political system gave it to them. It was, you know, propaganda is an ideology that's forced upon people. It's kind of censorship in reverse. You're being forced to pay for an opinion that you disagree with, mm-hmm. and that's being shoved down your throat.
But there are some people who are so charismatic and so effective with their words that they can take us places we wouldn't otherwise go.
But is it possible to draft legislation that would prevent those people from being able to do that? Can we do that at all?
I don't know. That's what we're trying to do right now.
I think we need charismatic people to take us in a proper direction. That again works on both sides of the street. You can have sincerity, you can have charisma, you can have all kinds of human qualities that can work toward good or evil.
Guys, we're going to go to the phones now. 643-1290 is the telephone number, *1290 on the Cantel, and we have caller Bill with us. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I think censorship, you have to be very careful with censorship. But I think there is room for it, and especially in the news, and that's one of my pet peeves. And I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
One is J.D. Cooper, I think it was, that hijacked the first airplane.
Yes. Well, not the first airplane, but he hijacked it and took some money and jumped out, right?
Right. And
yes.
A good idea for him to make money,
mm-hmm.
but by reporting it, he gave the idea to every terrorist in the world.
But, you know, there were not a spate of crimes where people took the money and jumped out of airplanes after that.
But no, but the idea of taking or hijacking an airplane to get what you want.
Oh, no, he was far from the first to do that. There were lots of people that did it before him.
Well, the reporting
people were hijacking trains and...
But you do hear that. There are copycats. Every time a movie comes out with an extremely clever way to commit a burglary or something, there are copycats who try it.
That's right, and that's why I think news should have a more... I'll give him a second example. Maybe more is the person that slipped some poison into Tylenol and put it back on the shelf in the store.
Yeah,
there was dozens of copycats.
Yes. Yeah.
Now I think you can report that some woman died for some reason, but to tell people how she died and give the idea to other people is irresponsible.
It's a really good point, Bill. But what happens on step two then? Step one is okay. We're not going to tell anybody that this happened. Step two, I don't know what the parallel will be, but some other crime comes along and say, okay, we're not going to report this crime. And then another crime comes along and the news reporters make a decision, well, we're not going to report. I mean, once you've started, where do you stop?
No, you can report the crime. You don't have to report how they did it. Somebody robbed a bank, but somebody went in with a bazooka instead of a gun, so everybody go get the bazooka. You just say the guy robbed the store.
Well, mm-hmm. Just to use your Tylenol example, Bill, I really can't agree with you. I think that let's assume that they did keep the story quiet. Would Tylenol then have had any incentive to put those really tough wrappers on their bottles? Because that came out of the consumer demand after the public found out about the potential threat, and it also prevented the thing from happening again in the future. It seems to me that the more we keep things closed up and away from the public, the less things will be done about it because nobody knows it's happening.
Well, there's got to be a happy medium there somewhere. I mean, FDA or whoever regulates that stuff, they could have known about this and forced the government or their companies into... taking security measures. But to tell everybody, I mean, there's a lot of nuts out there, but they can't come up with the ideas themselves. Yeah. They just take them off the news.
Bill, appreciate your call today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. And we've got Dave with us. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you. Good.
Just interested, I just happened to pick up your show on the phone or on the radio here and on the car, and you indicated that, you mentioned that your opinion of Starship Troopers, you didn't feel that was you felt it was an overly violent movie.
No, I don't think it was overly violent. I think it was a movie with no redeeming social value. So in that sense, I think it was gratuitous violence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with violence in movies at all. I like violent movies. But I also think that there is a role that you can teach. I believe you can teach lessons with movies and books and television programs. And I'm not saying that that anybody should be forced to teach those lessons. All I was saying was, in my opinion, that movie was gratuitously violent. The violence didn't serve any purpose at all other than just to be violent.
No, I agree. There's points in the movie that I felt were overly violent. But I also felt when I went to see the movie, I was going strictly for the entertainment
value. Dave, you're not understanding me. I don't think there was anything in that movie that was overly violent. I don't think there is such a thing as overly violent. What I'm saying is that ultimately I felt the movie did a disservice to its audience.
I see.
Because it had an opportunity to give us all the bang, bang, shoot 'em up that we want, and that's why we went to the movie. But at the key moment, when it could have had some redeeming social value, whatever that may be, they chose not to take it. And that's the point where they, instead of saying, gee, you know, the problem with these bugs is we haven't been communicating, and we could, you know, the more we communicate, the better off we're all going to be. Instead of that, it was, we've scared them, we got them on the run, let's kill them all.
Right,
and
yeah.
I just thought that was kind of unnecessary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you see the movie Crash?
Yes.
What's your opinion of the movie Crash as far as redeeming social value?
I think there was some redeeming social value in that movie, and for people who are not familiar with it, it's a rather bizarre movie that about people who found sexual release in car accidents, and it's even more bizarre than it sounds. I thought there was some redeeming social value there in that it was an exploration of the human condition and the psyche of these particular individuals. It was a little gruesome in spots and a little bizarre in spots, but again, I thought there was a message to that movie. The only message in Starship Troopers was, let's kill them all.
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure whether when the producers made that movie, whether they intended it to have a real message except to entertain people. And that's the way I felt about when I looked at when I saw the movie.
When I looked
at Crash, I thought Crash was a pretty sick movie. And the entertainment value of each one of those movies is totally different to what the directors wanted to... The message they want to get across.
Yeah, well, and don't misunderstand me. I thought Starship Troopers was very entertaining. I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though it was a comic book. I mean, it is a comic book. But it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it right up until that last scene, and I kept waiting for the point where they were going to perhaps, again, do something that I thought maybe gave it a little bit of redeeming social value, and they never did.
Mm-hmm. The movie Crash, it appeared to me, as I watched it, was a very depressing movie.
Yeah, it certainly was. I thought it was pretty sick.
It seemed to me like the director wasn't really endorsing what they were doing. It was just showing these people are so burned out or so twisted. Here's the wacko thing they're doing. Mm-hmm. And look, at the end, it doesn't help them at all anyway. They're just destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Appreciate the call.
All right, thanks
very much.
Right.
And the guy had a big four-door Lincoln like mine in that movie, too. And they trashed it, which I didn't like much. Anyway.
Now that's violence.
Yeah, now that's violence. Yes, indeed. Back to the phones. We have Chuck with us. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about violence, and I just, you know, I'm 70 years old, and I played cowboys and Indians and everything like that.
Yeah.
But we had an incident that happened to us. So you remember when Rambo came out?
Yep.
We had a lad... In fact, there was a couple, but the one lad, he went Rambo crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He was about 18, 19, around there, and he put the kerchief around his knife. He carried a knife in the back, and he carried his rifle. And we lived up in the country where there was acres. And, and he got himself in some real trouble.
Yeah.
And,
but do you think he would not have got into trouble if he hadn't seen the movie?
I don't know. I think he would have, but he just... And a lot of things like that happened. In fact, he got in so much trouble, and police were after him all the time, and his parents had four other boys, and they weren't any better, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he shot, we know he did, he put a bullet through one of the policemen's window up there.
Yeah.
And finally chased him, and they got in a car chase and everything.
But they had people doing crazy things before we had movies and television, too.
But it was just, it's just the way that they do it. Like, he, for some reason or other... Like, he saw Rambo, and
but do you think
that was his idol. You know, he went, like...
Yeah, but
he
obviously missed the point, because the point of the movie Rambo was not about taking on the authorities. The point of the movie Rambo was that when the authority goes astray, sometimes it has very nasty repercussions. That's what that movie was all about. He was a guy who was treated very badly, treated unjustly, and had the ability to respond negatively.
As a last resort.
The
striking thing about that first Rambo movie is that it wasn't, like, there was only one person who died in the movie. He did everything he could to keep from killing people throughout, and was just trying to get away.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of kids that this is where they come. They take an idol, you know. They get like myself in the old age, you know, like yourself. Like, okay, so John Wayne was my idol, you know, and I'd like to go out and be a gunfighter.
John Wayne killed a lot of people in his movies.
But this is what kids seem to do. They take an idol.
So is that a reason not to do it then? Should we have banned that movie then? Should we have said, no, you're not going to be allowed to see Rainbow?
No, I'm not saying you don't have to ban it. I mean, this is natural. With, like you guys were talking before, everybody's got an instinct in them that they... If somebody's going to come after you and something's really wrong, you're going to turn violent one way or the other.
Yeah. Appreciate the call today. Thanks for joining us today, Chuck. And we've got Gord up. Hello, Gord.
Hi, Jim.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if violence in the media contributes to violence in society, does comedy in the media contribute to a humorous society?
I think it's a very good... No, it's a funny question. I think it's a very good question. We are exposed today, I think, through the media to much more humor than was the case in the past. I mean, look at the Comedy Channel now.
Yeah.
We've got these new channels, and I've got to tell you, I watch the Comedy Channel more than all the other channels put together.
Well, Seinfeld must be a real contributor to random acts of humorous...
But it's true. When you talk about The Office the next day, you've got the shows you watched the night before. And I talked earlier about the violent movies contributing to the stress level of society. Hopefully the humor level contributes to, what is it, endorphins that are generated by laughing?
Yeah.
Theoretically, it seems like a healthy thing.
Well, I guess I also have to mention the fact that nobody counts up the random acts of comedy. And also that... some of the studies that have been done to show aggression in children and violence in the media are associated with males rather than females, and perhaps there's other causes in aggression than seeing a external act, and it might be caused internally by, say, testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's much more deeper things than just a simple observation of an act, and especially an act detached of knowledge, because children do not understand the whole question of literature and conflict, and what Bob was getting at about how, in order for there to be a story that's interesting, there has to be some kind of conflict, whether it's man versus nature, man versus himself, man versus man, etc. You also have to take a look at the fact that these are fictional representations and not real representations. And that if we look at violence in our society, I think that you'll find that it's acts of violence that are committed without regard to responsibility, mm-hmm. and that we do not hold people accountable. And I think that's a large measure of the problem.
Thanks for the call today, Gord.
Okay, thank you.
One of the purposes, I think, of art, of movies, of television, of literature, is to explore the human condition. And I want to refer to a particular movie, Pulp Fiction, that generated a tremendous amount of controversy. Have you gentlemen seen it? Tremendous amount of controversy. When the movie came out, we talked about it on the show, in fact, one day, and a number of people phoned and said, I walked out. I got up and walked out of the theater because I found it so offensive. I've seen it two or three times. It's one of my favorite movies. Not because of the violence, and there, as you know, is some very random and bizarre acts of violence in that movie. But I thought it was a fascinating look into the human condition, into the number of the different characters there, their interactions and so on. And a couple of them, as you know, were just stunningly violent and stunningly unconcerned about their violence. And yet I thought it was a real interesting exploration of the human condition. A lot of people looked at that movie and said it was disgusting, disgraceful, and should never have been allowed to be shown.
Well, I agree with, I think it was offensive and disgusting in a lot of ways, and that's one of the reasons I liked it. Just because of exactly what you said, that there are people like that out there who can totally divorce their emotions from the consequences of what they're doing or see it in another way. And it's interesting how that movie did integrate the violence with humor and with other elements of drama, and it was very cleverly directed, which was, to me, the most saving grace of the movie, was how the story was almost told backwards. It starts off in that restaurant and it ends up there. So the directing technique of getting the story across to you, where you see it in bits and pieces, and then finally you have to put it together in your own mind, I think that's terrific.
Well, there is a question. I guess I think about Reservoir Dogs then as another movie. And gotta go see Jackie Brown now, is Tarantino's new movie. Yeah. But Reservoir Dogs, I didn't see, but I understood it was more violent than...
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. So
okay. I sort of wonder whether there's almost like a...
an escalation effect in the media, where if somebody does something violent, the next guy's got to do something that much more violent and disturbing. And I would never suggest that this stuff should be censored, but on the other hand, I could see where it could do some harm somewhere. And one of the earlier callers talked about the other causes of violence and how, sure, you know, people are maybe violent for a whole host of reasons, probably coming back to the fact that they're mad about something, that I don't think people are suggesting that going and watching that movie will make you go and do a bad thing, but if you're in a mood to do something bad, it may give you ideas about how to go about it. One thing that struck me, I guess, it was a real eye-opener when I was on the police commission, was that them talking about knives and how dangerous knives are, mm-hmm. and how most people in Canada who are killed or seriously injured are with knives, and yet knives aren't controlled in anything like the way that guns are. We think guns are the dangerous things, mm-hmm. but the police will say it's knives that are the big bad problem. But you look on TV and in movies, and people are always knocking knives out of each other's hands. It doesn't seem to be a big deal at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder to what extent we're inflicting a disservice on society by, again, giving them an unrealistic idea, saying, well, knives aren't that big a deal. You know, we could probably knock it out of a guy's hand or whatever. Whereas the police will tell you, no, you can't. I remember the chief martial arts expert at the Elmer Police College testifying in a trial a few years ago saying that he couldn't do it. You know, he said, I might be able to knock a knife out of a guy's hand, but my hand would be cut badly mm-hmm. doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if he can't do it, the rest of us should be far more concerned about these things, but the media seems to tell us, or the fictional media tells us, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Knives aren't a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. 643-1290 is the telephone number. Ann joins us. Good morning, Ann.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I would like to know the percentage of people who are complaining about violence in the media. Are they mostly like parents of children who, you know, say that our children are exposed to too much violence on TV, through the movies, etc.?
I don't know if we've got any figures on percentages.
Okay, well, my experience is it's usually parents
yeah.
who are complaining about that, you know, their children are seeing
sure.
violence
mm-hmm.
and things like that, and they want whoever to censor these movies and things like that. And I disagree with that, because I think that if you do not want your children to see this violence, or if you're worried that your child may be influenced by this, why aren't you monitoring what they're watching?
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, comes back to the responsibility of the parents. I don't know how many kids, my children's friends, who have watched R-rated movies
yeah.
that have been rated, that's why they have the rating system.
Yeah.
You know, and their parents either A, don't know that they've seen this movie, or B, don't really care
yeah.
to check up on to see what this movie is like.
Yeah.
So, again, I would say that censoring is wrong, because I feel that these movies are rated to age appropriateness, and if your child can't handle it, then why are you letting them watch it? Because you don't care what they're watching, or because you just figure it doesn't matter, or whatever. So that's my biggest beef. I can't believe the amount of R-rated movies some of these kids have seen,
yeah.
and it's definitely they're at the wrong age.
Good point.
Although I think that rating is more based on sexuality and sexual content
well,
than
yes,
violence.
I agree, but they are starting to come out with stricter regulations as far as the ratings go for violence.
Yeah.
I know that I've watched a couple of pretty violent movies that were given an R rating strictly mm-hmm. because of the violence. There was absolutely hardly anything sexual in the movie.
Yeah.
I know, like, I'd be interested in finding out how they would rate a show like Brooklyn South, for instance, extremely violent cop
right.
show on TV. And I think they are starting to come out with
yes.
those little logos.
Yeah.
In the little corner
yeah.
of the
right,
TV
yeah.
where you can see it's got a V for violence.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's what they're starting to do.
I think ratings can sometimes be as much of a hassle as a solver of problems because...
Right.
Because they give such a broad label to everything, you know?
Right, but we still have to have something. But I think that it's a drastic decline in the last 10, 15 years of parents' involvement in what
yeah.
their children are actually
yeah.
doing.
No question.
And everything like that. And this is my biggest concern, is not, you know, like, I don't like censoring of books or programs or things like that. It's either if you've watched it and it's not appropriate, then why are you going to let them watch it, you know,
yep.
to get them out of the way or whatever?
Yeah, good point. Thanks for the call, Ann.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to pause for a second. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the comparison between sex in the movies and violence. Stay with us. Left, Right, and Center is the name of this program. I'm Jim Chapman. Guys, a question for either or both of you. When we look at people who are... promoting the censorship of sexual materials, sex, you know, explicit graphic sex movies and so on. What often comes up, more often than not, at some point in the discussion, is the idea that portraying these sex acts is demeaning to individuals. Usually they talk about it being demeaning to women, because more often than not it's women who are complaining about it, but men too, that it's demeaning to have human beings portrayed and having sex. You seldom hear that word demeaning used in portrayals of violence, and I've always found that kind of curious, because it seems to me that if what we're saying is that violence is a negative, it's not a positive human attribute, it's not something we want emulated and so on, that also is demeaning. Now, I don't happen to buy that rationale, but it's always struck me as curious why that parallel doesn't move from the discussions of sex in the movies to discussions of violence. Either of you have any thoughts on that?
Well, to some extent, it may be that there's not a discrete group that sort of equal opportunity killers in movies. Everybody gets it. If there was a movie where it was just women getting it or something, presumably, then there may be an argument like that. But maybe we don't sort of associate it as being a particular group. On the other hand, we've seen criticisms in movies, though, about sort of stereotypical portrayals of ethnic groups, like, for instance, Arabs in the context of... I can't remember if True Lies was... The bad guy was an Arab or not. There was a movie not that long ago.
I forget, too. That's Barney's movie. I forget who the bad guys are. Isn't that interesting, though? We do forget, do we not? We forget who the bad guys are, because who they are is less important than what
important.
They do.
No.
Yeah.
It's what the good guys do that we're watching, and that's who we're talking about.
True.
And it's speaking of True Lies, it was funny because when Jamie Lee Curtis discovers that her husband... Arnold Schwarzenegger is this super secret agent, you know, and she asks him, and she looks him in the eye, and she goes, "Did you ever kill anybody?" And he looks at her and smiles and says, "Yeah, but they were bad people." As though that immediately excused everything.
But isn't that what,
of course it does.
Isn't that what it's about, isn't it?
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between a hero and the bad guy, is that the hero's killing the bad guys, using force against force, never initiating force as a general rule. But getting back to your basic question about demeaning, I think often that argument comes with another package philosophy, usually by the groups that are using it, and they find that there are a lot more things demeaning to women or whatever the minority group is mm-hmm. than just that depiction. But I think, you know, personally you can understand it to some degree. Sex is a very personal thing with everyone. It's part of our nature. And to see something, an act that one person may have a certain thought or belief or values about, and to see those values in some way poo-pooed or not even considered or even mm-hmm. laughed at, that is an insult in a way mm-hmm. to a lot of people, and I can understand why they would argue that. But again, censorship's not an answer to that. If that's how you feel about something, then by all means, you know, don't frequent that kind of entertainment outlet. But I wouldn't say that most of the people that are into that entertainment look at things like that.
Is it possible that that there's a very strong positive in this? And Bob, you made reference to this, the good guys killing the bad guys. I have experienced, I'm sure both of you have, and I'm sure most of our listeners have, seen movies where at some point there is a violent act that we applaud because the bad guy, the evil guy, fella who has
Bronson movies.
The guys who have gone around the system or abused the system or manipulated the system, a system that we depend on to protect ourselves, they've managed to slip through the cracks. And Charles Bronson, a wonderful example in the what do they call those movies?
Can't think of them, but
anyway, the ones he plays Paul Kersey in the movies.
The issue is justice, you know.
Well, and that's
justice.
Exactly.
It's not violence.
But do you think that they provoke people to go out and seek that kind of personal retribution themselves, or are they just cathartic for us? That it's fun to watch a movie where the good guy wins.
I think it's more like, gee, thank goodness somebody can do something about something. You know, like people get frustrated in their daily lives. Listen to this show on your average show. All the people calling up frustrated with the way our justice system mm-hmm. handles criminals, with the way so-and-so's getting away with something. It's almost like it placates the masses to be able to go see a Charles Bronson movie or an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where the good guys actually do win.
But again, that comes back to another difficulty, and I have to declare at the outset, I don't watch Charles Bronson movies. I don't really like violent movies. I just mm-hmm. don't enjoy them. Like, to me, an Indiana Jones is sort of about as far as I like to go. Pulp Fiction, for me, what was good about it was the humor rather than the violence. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the dangers is that you get these cartoonish distinctions between good and bad that just aren't reflected in our society, and you talk about perceptions the public have about the court system, for instance, and the justice system. I think they think it's a lot worse than it actually is because of movies which set up these situations where there's a particularly corrupt system or this particularly bad whatever that has to be dealt with. And that's a danger.
I see what you're saying when you say cartoon distinctions, because it becomes a two-dimensional thing on the screen, but you could only deal with so many ideas in a given half hour or 90-minute period.
Yeah, true.
So it's part of drama and part of all good theater, I think, to isolate those cartoon elements of what they want to focus on. Every writer has a different style. Some writers may focus on the emotion, others on the logic, others on the philosophy. You know, it depends what they isolate, and that's what makes their story either interesting or boring. If you get a totally multi-dimensional type of story, it gets sometimes too lost, too boring, too complicated, and those movies are tougher to absorb, really.
The Charles Bronson movie, Death Wish, was that series that he made of the, retributive ones. Yes. I want to go back to a movie, come on, 1971, and it was just absolutely scandalous. It was censored. There were parts removed that have later been put in. The Wild Bunch, Sam Peckinpah's, probably his most noted work and probably his most, I hate it when this happens.
Gory.
Representative. Now, there was a movie that was absolutely chock full of violence. Some of it random, some of it not. There is a scene there where a fella gets his throat cut, and you see it, at least you didn't see it then, but in the later, the restorations of the movie, you actually saw, special effects guy's throat cut, so on, so on. Now, people attacked that movie and attacked that particular scene as being unnecessary and gratuitous and so on. And yet in the context of the movie, when I finally saw the director's version of it, it was absolutely required in the movie. You could have done it other ways, but it was the single act in the movie that pushed the whole movie over the edge. And all of the negative things that had been going on, all of the criminal acts and all of the evil that had been happening, and these guys who in fact were very evil themselves, but were placed in a position of being the redemptors of this community, and slit the guy's throat, all hell breaks loose, when everything's over, everybody's dead. Good guys, bad guys, everybody's dead. But the good guys were bad guys too. And it's often, in the context of that movie, it has always surprised me how many people missed the point of that scene. Do you think that happens too often when we're looking at movies and trying to, or people are looking at movies and trying to decide what the problem is, that they maybe, they look at an act without putting it in the full context of the movie?
Particularly if it is cut, and often movies are cut. There's all the time, I understand, there are things being taken out of movies for whatever reason.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw the world premiere of Alien back in the 70s when it was released. I saw it in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very frightening, that first scene where the first one or two people get killed. But when the Ontario release came out, and it was supposedly not censored, that scene wasn't in the movie.
Mm.
And it has since. I've seen a version or two that has placed it back in. Just recently. I don't know if it's just come back through the country. But I thought it was a very important scene to the movie. It never repeated itself.
Mm-hmm.
But once you saw that once, you were on the edge of your seats for the rest of that movie. And yes, it's a very important, I think it's a judgment call on the director's part. I've seen a lot of movies where the violence is gratuitous, and by that I mean it doesn't contribute to the plot or to the reaction that the director might want to get out of you.
Mm-hmm.
When you saw that scene in The Wild Bunch, you're being set up by the director.
Absolutely,
And he's emotionally manipulating you, which is very important, so that imagine if at the end of the movie you're watching the good guys get even with the bad guy, but you didn't really see the real bad things that the bad guy did, and you might be thinking, well, these guys are overreacting. What a bunch of bums, Like, I think these are the bad guys. So if you had seen the whole movie, you'd understand that conflict between good and evil. And this is what bothers me a lot when we sanitize these movies. We're taking out that distinction of judgment that must be made. And this is where the whole issue of violence emanates, is people not distinguishing between when it is appropriate to use force, and that is always in self-defense, and when it's inappropriate, and that's when you're being offensive.
Another aspect of that that you refer to, and that is sort of the, in order to make this movie make sense, you've got to go there emotionally, and it seems to me that in order to be effective art, there's nothing wrong with taking us to the limits of our emotions,
mm-hmm.
and one of the places that we're at our most emotional is when we're scared or violence is involved, and there's nothing wrong with recognizing that's the way we are.
And a good horror show will really be a good pickup. I mean, we don't live our lives normally.
I'm afraid of those. I don't watch those.
I don't like them at all. I don't watch horror movies. I don't like them.
I used to be like that, and then I saw, you know, the first Nightmare on Elm Street, when I first saw that, I had avoided it for years, and I ended up watching it by accident one day, and I said, this was a good movie. It was, I didn't like the ending. I would have changed the ending again, not because it didn't have a message, but because I thought I could have put a scarier ending on it.
Yeah.
But, no, it was a great thrill, and there was just that one real, you know, quote, explicit violent scene. Never happened again, but the rest of the movie you were expecting it to, and it was a fun ride. I didn't see it as gratuitous violence. It was a scare for a scare's sake. The same reason you get on a roller coaster or you get on anything. You are in the safety of your home. You're in the safety of something. This is not reality we're talking about. And I think as human beings, I can imagine one day we might have something like holodecks like they do on Star mm-hmm. Trek, and who knows what kind of fantasies we're going to be acting out in those things.
You know, the unfortunate part is that you make these movies and so on, and they're okay for 99.99% of the people who get it,
yeah.
You know, who get the message or who understand that it's just you know, fiction or whatever. And the question is, how do we isolate the, you know, 0.0001% that really are going to take this the wrong way?
But can we ever do that? I mean, we weren't able to, you know, you can look at literature. There's even, you go back prior to the 20th century, and Shakespeare is a wonderful example. Very graphically violent, many of his plays, very nasty, disgusting, disgraceful things taking place. And yet, and as you're quite right, Jeff, there have probably been some people who have been negatively affected by that. But this, you know, is that a thing that society should be pursuing? How do we control? How do we separate? How do we weed out this 0.1%?
Yeah.
Or is that just simply a price we pay for living together in a society that
maybe? Well, if you want your freedom, you have to build a certain level of tolerance, and there's a certain amount of risk involved. But it sure is a heck of a lot less than the risk involved in living in a society where you don't have any freedom.
We're coming right back with more on Left, Right, and Center here on Talk of the Town. Do either of you have any examples, just for the sake of argument, of movies that you think are totally without redeeming social value and could just kind of drop off the map without anybody suffering any loss? And I'm not talking about terrible movies. I'm talking maybe some, you know, well-known movies that you think really do not deserve their place in the lexicon.
There are so many of them. I can't. I'm a bad person. I can watch a movie yesterday and forget the title today. And there are. You know, Pulp Fiction is one of the few I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period that Pulp Fiction came out on video, I must have watched I don't know how many movies, and they just all bored me. And the irony was, I found myself bored by the violence and action parts, whereas yeah. I would wake up when the dialogue got going, and mm-hmm. if there was a good dialogue. But yeah, there's a lot of, you know, they can be entertaining. I wouldn't write off any movie completely.
Well, here, I'll take a shot at one.
Sure,
for you. Okay, just off the top of my head. I think the Godfather movies were movies that I never really understood in the sense mm-hmm. that, you know, it's a story about a family,
Godfather.
But it seemed to aggrandize organized crime. And that at the end of the day, it was the mafia guys that were the good guys, and the police seemed to be sort of always the bad guys. And
that was the point of that movie.
No, but that's not reality. That's not the real life.
I don't know. I think there was a lot of truth in that movie, and I think that was... what a movie to pick as one without socially redeeming value.
I never understood it.
Isn't that interesting, you know, that two people can look at one movie mm-hmm. like that, and I would say that was one of the greatest movies of its decade. And not that I'm into organized crime or even that whole Hollywood...
Oh, we're on the show because we disagree about things.
Of all movies to pick.
Well, I think on that note, and until somebody makes us an offer we can't refuse, we're going to wrap up today's program. Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We are, of course, folks, we're going on a two-week hiatus, so Bob and Jeff will not be back until the new year. I think it's the 7th of January will be our next edition of Left, Right, and Center.